Yeah, very tricky times. Thank you very much. That was Thabo and Brits joining us on the conversation around the minimum wage. Tomorrow is, of course, the big day. And the reason I keep saying it's a big day is that if you all remember, in February 2018, President Cyril Ramaphosa delivered his first State of the Nation address, and there would be, you would have struggled to find anyone within the parliamentary precinct that day who didn't have a sense of optimism. So maybe the sense of optimism was a simple fact that it was a new person delivering the State of the Nation address. A lot of people said there's a new dawn. In fact, the president himself said there would be a new dawn. He even quoted Hugh Masekela. He said, "We must all put out our hands and agree to help the state fix itself." Tumamina was the rallying call. That was in 2018. Here we are in 2022. What is the picture? What is the state of the nation? Tomorrow will be his last time as part of his first term as ANC president, which means that if he survives in December, he'll get another chance to give us a State of the Nation address. If he doesn't survive in December, well, tomorrow is the big day. Does that put more pressure on him to deliver? Has it put more pressure on him to sell us even more dreams, maybe sell us even greater expectations? I do not know. We'll be definitely picking this up tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Before then, we'll be speaking to Anne Bernstein, who, of course, like many of us, has been tracking the developments in the state of the nation for many, many years. And Anne, I imagine over the past 4 or 5 years, there have been moments where you're like, yo, actually, where are we going as a country? What are you expecting from tomorrow's State of the Nation address as the CDE?
Well, Kaya, good evening. I'm not expecting very much, to be honest with you. I've given up hoping for a lot from State of the Nation addresses, but I'll tell you what I would like to hear. I don't think we're going to, but I think that South Africans are tired, as you were indicating, of promises, promises, and words, 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 and the country is really in a... Many people have a real sense of decline, that South Africa is in big trouble and that somehow not enough is being done. So what I would like to hear tomorrow is a president who says, this is the diagnosis of the terrible situation South Africa is in. We have probably the worst unemployment in the world. We have a stagnant economy. We have a fiscal crisis. And now we have armed insurrectionary. So in addition to everything else, we have to worry about stability of our society and our state. And nobody has been arrested of any significance who caused the July events, the terrible events last year. So yeah. I'm looking for an honest diagnosis, and on the basis of that diagnosis, a new approach altogether. I think that's what the country needs. We can't go on as we are if we're going to turn things around. I'm looking for bold decisions and action that takes place with urgency. And I'm looking for a recognition that we have a cabinet with many, many people who are not competent or are associated with corruption. So it's both policy and people and a bold set of actions to turn the country in a new direction and to give people hope, hopefully coming out of COVID. I don't think most people appreciate the devastation, the poverty, the despair, and what it means to have a country where more people are unemployed than employed. It's just horrific.
And you probably, I thought you'd be more optimistic than I am, but I suppose these are sobering reflections based on actual facts. The immediate tension point that emerges from him being honest in any form or another is that it all comes down back to him, isn't it? Because whatever the reasons are for the paralysis that we've seen, at least in the past 4 years, are squarely in his shoulders as the person who decides who should be responsible for which portfolio, who should be responsible for what. And even if you expand it beyond the 4 years, well, he's been at the heart and epicenter of the ANC government throughout the period that he himself once told us as was heading to Davos that it was, you know, the 9 wasted years. So it is difficult to imagine that he can afford to be honest and not actually have to deal with the fact that we're going to have to come back and say, but President, this sounds like a problem of your own creation.
I agree with you. I think leaders, big leaders, can change a country's direction. They can change their own direction. So I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just saying that the way I see the country, unless something big happens, unless the president says the future of the country is more important than the unity of the ANC. He won't take the big decisions. He won't fire. I mean, imagine having someone in your cabinet who doesn't believe in the Constitution and who defies your authority at biggest belief. Imagine having, you know, if you read this report that came out this week, I was reading it this afternoon, it's a devastating account of failure by the state, the police, the security agencies, the National Security Council, that didn't anticipate what might happen and were inadequate to deal with the terrible violence and deaths.
Sure.
So I'm afraid I'm not optimistic. I'm somebody who's very positive about the people of South Africa, but I feel we're being let down by the politicians in power.
And, I mean, I suppose we do have to ask the difficult questions about where it all went wrong, because I imagine 4 or 5 years ago, the president had an idea, he had a plan, he had essentially the greatest sense of goodwill that you could have ushered in simply because of what had happened in the years leading up to his election as a president. Is this someone who took all that goodwill and spent the next 4 years completely squandering it in many ways possible?
Look, I think he inherited a very difficult situation, let's be fair. I agree with you, he was part of the ANC and the Zuma government that created it, but he inherited a very difficult situation. I think there are a number of assumptions that have not worked out well. He's done some positive things, but I don't think that it's been followed through. So, you know, he put a new person in charge of the NPA. Was she the right person or wasn't she? But that's not enough. You have to give her authority to get rid of a whole lot of corrupt people in the NPA. You've got to give her authority to kind of cut through it all and get new people who are committed to implementing our country's laws and charging people. And that hasn't happened. So it's all very slow and you know, if you want to be a reformer, and if you look at a lot of the literature about reform and the successful reformers, reform is hard. We have to accept that. But you have to be very determined. You have to think about how to implement it. What's the politics of implementing reform? Because as you attack vested interests, you make enemies. And you better be very sure you're going to make a whole lot of new friends very quickly. And I think, you know, this idea of the long game that people said that the president was playing. I wrote an article last year saying the long game is too long for a country in crisis.
Mm.
And in some respects, things are better than when he took over. But in other respects, you have to say we're in a worse situation. And when people start losing hope and when leaders start losing credibility, now that's a very worrying time for a country.
And even as recently as towards the end of last year, we got wind of a clip from an NEC meeting where you would have thought so many years down the line, surely even he should have acknowledged that this fixation with putting the ANC's unity above everything else has become self-defeating, particularly for him, for the party and for the country at large. And yet it still seems like that is the one thing that he seems to have centered his legacy around, the fact that the ANC must emerge united at whatever cost. The report that you referred to earlier on this week, where people's lives actually lost, over 300 citizens lost their lives, even that report comes back and says that this political party is so fractured, is so divided, the consequence of that inability for it to be cohesive about anything has for one time actually led to people losing their lives, and yet the president still insists that is the one thing that must define his legacy. It just beggars belief.
I know. You know, when you think about when the president came in, he commissioned a report on the intelligence service, the security, the whole area of the country I know nothing about, and of government. He got Sydney Mufamadi, the former cabinet minister, to look into that for him. Good move. He gets that report December 2018. And from what we know of what was in that report, it was very clear. It said that the security agencies are divided, they're factionalized, some support Zuma, that some are up to very nefarious things, some are corrupt, some are, I suppose you could say, treasonous. But he sat on that report until last year, and you wonder why. So I interviewed Mavusa Musimang last year, an excellent interview and a man I respect a great deal, and I asked him, I said, you know, how do you see the situation in the ANC and the president's drive for unity at all costs? And he was quiet for a moment, and he said, how do you unify with thieves? And I think that's the dilemma, that if you say the unity of the ANC is the most important thing facing the country, I think you end up where we are now, and it's a complete dead end. And this is what makes our current situation extremely worrying, especially in a context where I think our problems can be solved. Mm. I think there are a lot of people of goodwill who wanted to, Mamina, a lot of people in the private sector, in civil society, who want to build a successful country that gives, you know, expands opportunities dramatically for poorer South Africans and for unemployed people. They want to do this, but they kept not being listened to and not being there. Appeals for change to allow them to play a bigger role are not being allowed. So we're kind of in this strange situation where we have an incredibly dynamic non-government sector, you could say, with its faults, of course, but willing and eager to help build a better country for everybody. And yet our politicians are holding us back, I think.
It's a very, very tragic state of affairs. We've got a caller, Thabo from Mamelodi, calling us on 0861-987-000. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening, Kaya. Kaya, common sense. We know that president has inherited a bunch of Zuma cabinet, and then we all know that they are loyal to the former president. We all know that their proximity is in Uganda. But you speak of getting rid of corruption against the very same people that are corrupt. There's going to be a fight back. This is logic. You have to see that until the president realizes that he needs to rearrange his cabinet. The country, we're going to move one step forward, five steps back. There's never going to be a progress until the president sits down and see, I've tried all my level best. This election is going nowhere. And then now it's taking us back. There's no way we are going to move
on. Thank you, Kai. All right, thank you, Thabo from Mamelodi. Now, Anne, perhaps the one thing that all of us, in spite of our feelings or persuasions around the president or against the president, would have agreed on, that infrastructure drive that he went on a couple of years ago seemed to be going in the right direction, because we all know the multiplier effects of an infrastructure drive across the country, particularly a country with such high unemployment rates. So that was the one thing that I think we all universally agreed that's the right thing to do. It's completely collapsed and fizzled out, hasn't it?
Well, Kaya, I organized a workshop in late last year of the most senior people in government in charge of the infrastructure drive and the biggest investors in the country to try and puzzle out what was going wrong. And there's no doubt the private sector is ready to invest, but there are no projects that are bankable coming into the market. And what's going on? Well, the government infrastructure, sort of the architecture in government to get infrastructure projects to market is pretty complicated. And even Dr. Ramakgopa, who's head of the infrastructure unit in the presidency, he's saying that, you know, there have been 272 projects that have been pitched. His unit is focusing on 76, of which 50 have been developed but are not ready to be implemented. And in his view, this will take a long time. What are the issues that are holding things back? Well, there are a number of regulations that have to be changed in order to ease the way to effective public-private partnerships, which we desperately need because the state doesn't have the money to fund infrastructure. And there are good people working on this, but when you say, can't you speed it up? You know, what is the delay? It's not like there's a sense in government of fast track this as quickly as you can. It's got to go through all these processes and consultation and whatever, and there's no sort of speed. So maybe we'll get these regulations changed by the middle of this year, hopefully, but not really guaranteed. And you sort of say to yourself, why not? So that's one issue. A second issue is, I think government often likes to add on multiple objectives to a project. So the project is build a road or build, you know, expand our ports. And then they add in all sorts of other things. But you must use local companies. You must do this. You must comply with BEE. You know, 700 other objectives that might be valid. We could debate those. But if you add too many objectives to the core objective, you end up not getting anything done. And then the third thing, if you'll let me continue, there is a lot of confusion about what I would call the rule of law and criminality. So there are what Dr. Ramakopa called construction mafias who come along when you're trying to get something done or build something new, and they're crooks, essentially, and they say, we represent the local community, and unless you give us money, jobs, whatever we ask for, we'll destroy whatever you're building. I don't think that's community development at all. It's a small group of crooks and criminals, and we should, the full force of the law should come down on them. Community development, something completely different. Lots and lots of people will benefit if you get a road built or the bridge or we get exports going. Everybody benefits from that. But to be held hostage by these sort of local criminals is, I think, a very big mistake. And the government has allowed this to happen. We also allow existing infrastructure to be attacked. Think of, besides the riots last year, think of Richards Bay, where an executive is killed, or you can't use the road, or the trucks block the roads, you know, the most important roads between Durban and Johannesburg. Where are the police? So there are a lot of issues that affect the confidence of the private sector to invest. And the positive proposal that came out of our workshop, there were two, really. The one is, let's pick four or five projects, and let's curb our ambitions. Let's understand how weak the state is, and let's focus on four or five that we could actually get to happen. And they won't be perfect. They won't fit all the boxes, but we'll learn by doing, and we'll send a big, bold signal. That's the one. And the other is, maybe one can find the people within government who, and there are people who are good at their jobs and want to work and not corrupt, and you could set up a center of excellence, perhaps, that could work on developing projects for market. And they could be paid for that. So there were some positive examples of what one might do. But I'm not sure that the state is ready to say, what we're doing isn't working. We've got to think afresh.
A very, very sobering reflection on the state of the nation. Thank you very much, Anne Bernstein. I don't know, guys. Tomorrow, I don't know what to expect, but from what we've heard since 2018, it'll be difficult for any of us to justify any sense of optimism because the president keeps stumbling down the ladder of expectations, and perhaps tomorrow we are going to reach the absolute bottom of it when he's got nothing left to sell. Absolutely nothing left to sell except for his fixation with the unity of the party, which, to be fair, even that has eluded them, hasn't it, since December 2017. Anyway, we'll catch up with you tomorrow evening, just an hour ahead of the State of the Nation address. Until then, have a